kids get labeled in school: outgoing, dramatic, talented, shy, hyperactive, and then there's ADHD. That label can be profoundly determinative. ADHD is a label that can channel kids into special programs and sometimes narrow their options in college and high school. Psychologists have long debated whether or not ADHD is an actual psychiatric disorder treatable with powerful drugs, or closer to simply a category of personality. But Scott Barry Kaufman, scientific director of the Imagination Institute in the Positive Psychology Center at the University of Pennsylvania, says that the way our educational system and the psychiatric system view ADHD may be seriously flawed. Kaufman says we should reframe the label as just people who have a more active imagination. And imagination is something, Kaufman says, we should be learning a lot more about.
What I like to do is look at the different characteristics that are associated with the label. It is a label at the end of the day. It's something
a dreadful label.
It's something we put on people,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Especially in an educational context.
And some people, you know, embrace the label because it gives them certain advantages. Other people get stuck with the label and they can't get rid of it.
Right. Well, I think that everything is an interaction of genetic contributions and the environment, how we treat people. And even though there might be some genetic contributions, there most certainly are genetic contributions to some of the characteristics that we associate with ADHD, such as impulsivity, inattention, mind-wandering, daydreaming. That doesn't mean that these aren't things that can't change behaviors, that can't change through different environmental situations at all.
I have a son who daydreams all the time. Sometimes it's incredibly frustrating, you know, when it involves cleaning up his room. But, you know, I often look at it as something that's wonderful about him.
Yeah.
And I see him daydreaming his way through all kinds of problem solving and into places that he develops all kinds of expertise, you know, music, that sort of thing. As a parent, how do you avoid ADHD as a way of kind of lumping all this stuff together?
Well, if you're a parent and you see that your child has a lot of a big need to act in the world and to be an active learner, I think that you should work with the administrators, with the teachers, to allow your child to do project-based learning, allow your child to do inquiry, discovery-based learning, to really be an active learner. And this is a broader issue. I think that all students should get the opportunity to be active learners. You give them an opportunity to actually take control of the learning process and be driven by their interior monologue, their interior fantasies, their interior daydreams, allowing the student to have some autonomy in that process, and you can see them flourish.
Do you think that teachers often are impatient with creativity and it becomes a kind of ADHD sort of nomenclature?
Absolutely. I mean, they've done studies where they've had teachers rate all of the most problem behaviors that they see in the classroom from students, and they also had them rate the characteristics they think were most associated with creativity, and they found almost a complete overlap of the two categories.
So what does that mean about the educational system, in that we're aiming for some kind of normal and that normal is not necessarily particularly creative, and therefore people on the fringe, people who have exciting and interesting talents get forgotten?
Absolutely. It also means, quite simply, we don't value creativity. We don't value imagination either. Imagination is a necessary part of creativity. So every time that we force a student to passively listen to a lecture or something that the student's not personally interested in or personally doesn't see the relevance to their future life, we're robbing them of that opportunity to imagine their own personal futures, to imagine a new curriculum that might not even exist yet.
I don't know how much data you have at this point, but fMRI studies on people with ADHD, what do they show?
Well, this is what's interesting. So it shows that there's this brain network, which cognitive scientists call the default mode network, which is what is most active when our brain is at rest. So we're just idle and we're just sitting there and people aren't competing for our attention. This brain network is most active. And I've referred to it as the imagination brain network because I think that's what it really is. All the cognitive processes such as perspective taking, daydreaming, mind wandering, moral reasoning all involve imagination. And it's very different than the kind of brain network which is associated with like taking IQ tests, for instance, which relies more on the executive attention network or like sitting at and paying attention to a boring lecture. So the latest research shows that this brain network, the imagination brain network, is highly, highly conducive to creativity and creative thought. And those who are diagnosed with ADHD seem to have greater difficulty than those not diagnosed with ADHD in suppressing activity in this imagination brain network. So in a way, you could actually conceptualize people with ADHD as having an overactive imagination as opposed to a learning disability.
And this imaginative part of the brain is actually something that is a feature of human brains. Our executive function is evolved from all kinds of sort of animal traits that involve survival, involve evaluating what's going on in the environment, who's an enemy, who's a friend, that kind of thing. I mean, you've got all the brainstem stuff that relates to pure sort of organic survival. In many ways, the ADHD that you're studying is this newly evolved function within the brain trying to kind of break out and maybe get a little more attention.
Well, let me tell you something. There's a research about 40, 50,000 years ago. You know, we left Africa, a band of us left Africa, and we went to Europe and eventually conquered the world. In order to travel and go through such distance, it's been found there was a genetic mutation. And this particular genetic mutation associated with dopamine has been found to be associated with ADHD. So without these characteristics, we may not have become Homo sapiens.
So it's
just to be dramatic about it.
Well, it's conceivable that the dopamine content of Christopher Columbus's brain might have encouraged him to say to Queen Isabella, you know, I bet I could get to the other side of the world by sailing across the ocean.
That's right. You can think, because you can conceptualize ADHD people who we give that label to as explorers. That's what they are. They're explorers. Imagine being an explorer trapped in an educational classroom where the teacher is saying, pay attention to me and don't explore. It drives them nuts.
What's your personal dimension, personal connection to all of this?
Well, I was diagnosed with a learning disability when I was really young. I was diagnosed with an auditory hearing disability called central auditory processing disorder and was treated as though I was stupid for most of my educational experience, for a couple key teachers who really looked beyond the label and believed in me and helped me question my place in the hierarchy. I could assure you I would probably not have graduated high school.
What was it like to have someone who could see into you and connect with something that you knew to be true but everyone else was ignoring?
Words can't even describe how important that was. I think that as all educators, regardless of what label you have about a child right in front of you, that you really take the time to see, truly see that person in front of you. Listen to their dreams. Listen to their interior monologues. Let them daydream and then express those daydreams and reflections to you, because that is going to be some of the most valuable information you could possibly have in order to help that student or bring out the best in that student.
So, Scott, who was it that said to you, hey, what's going on in there, Scott? Tell me a little bit about what you're thinking.
Well, I had a number of key people, but in ninth grade, I was in special education, and Joyce Jewell was a particular special ed teacher. Mm-hmm. And she took me aside, and she saw my frustration. She saw I wasn't taking this untimed history test, and I was daydreaming, looking across the hall at the advanced biology classroom that I really wanted to take, but they wouldn't let me take. And she said, you know, I see you, and I was wondering if you, you know, why are you still here? Why have you thought about trying and taking off the crutches and seeing if you can handle mainstream education? And I realized I had no good answer. No one ever bothered to ask me that question.
And how did you get from here to there? Was it her recommendation? Was it you raising your hand and saying, I'd like to try the big stuff?
I became inspired all of a sudden and decided I was going to take myself out of special education. And I set up this meeting with the school administrators, the principal. They didn't really know what to do. This was not part of their regular programming.
So. How scary was it to confront them and to ask them?
I was terrified.
Yeah.
I was terrified. But I was also, I was like so driven at that point and so excited to just see what I was capable of. I felt my whole life that I'm capable of more intellectual challenges. It was going from a period of helplessness most of my life to, oh my gosh, I'm able to make decisions. It was, you know, putting kids in a position of even a little bit of power or autonomy on the learning process, I can personally say goes miles and miles.
Well, it's a remarkable and exciting view of ADHD and a really interesting contribution to the debate. Scott, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Scott Barry Kaufman is Scientific Director of the Imagination Institute in the Positive Psychology Center at the University of Pennsylvania. He's also a psychologist at Penn. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.